Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
No such thing as a media ban. We don't have a media ban.
Ah, you do.
No, we don't.
A donkey eat and a donkey eat a palace. There's nothing else to eat.
He was massive. Legs, ass, filth. But I burst out laughing watching him.
So last Thursday, we were all excited, lads, about the games on television. The Kerry semi-final, the Mayo final. We had Conor on talking up Bell Mullet. You know, looking forward to seeing that one, even though we were given the heads up it wasn't going to be a classic. And then, obviously, Kilmacud Crokes versus St Jude's was interesting for all sorts of reasons. It's fair to say it was a damn squib. Lee, Jesus Christ, we got very unlucky. The Austin Stacks kind of ended up a little bit exciting. Austin Stacks and Kilmacud Crokes games ended up exciting, but they were very hard watches up until that point. And the Mayo match was just a complete another... God, it was one of the worst games I've ever watched.
Yeah, it was a bit of a damn squid the whole weekend as a whole in terms of what we were watching. I was trying to think if there's like a common theme why they're all like this, you know, for just this one weekend. Nearly every game you watched was really low scoring, sort of tactically defensive, and overall just pretty slow. And I'm wondering if it's to do with the weather. Is it just that time of the season where fatigue is starting to set in? I'm not too sure, but I watched the Mayo game. I had it on TG Cahir in the TV in front of me, and then I had the laptop playing the Glen and St Union's game, and it wasn't a spectacle either. Like, it finished 8-1-4, so hardly a thrilling match. But for both games, you know, every time I looked my head back and forth, there just seemed to be someone was on the floor, the referee was given a card, and it was just all very stop-go.
Yeah, no, it definitely was. Look, there's a lot of reasons for this. Obviously, a lot of teams are dropping men behind the ball. We're in November. The ground isn't very hard. You know, fast players can't break lines. They can't get away from their man as easily. And then you throw in on top of that the kind of low risk, let's keep the ball, let's not take chances, let's not kick it all that much. All this kind of thing adds up. Then you have lower skilled players, Niall, at club level, obviously, compared to county level. And all this kind of adds up to a pretty difficult watch, a lot of these matches.
Yeah, I think TG Cahir learned an important lesson, Willie, that they should stick to the hurling in future. No, it was the three games, they were sort of tough to watch, weren't they? Like, yeah. It was just all kind of hand passing around. And I suppose when it is winter football and the ground is heavy, and, you know, maybe it suits the sort of bigger players more, but it seemed to be the same team throughout the games, that very few teams could find the gap to break through.
Yeah.
And like, you're kind of waiting for that, maybe the breakaway move, but there doesn't seem to be too many of them when it's so defensive. Like,
yeah, that kind of counter-attack football is gone. That's kind of, it doesn't really work anymore. So you just kind of have stalemate football, I would kind of call it. And, you know, when there's very little kicking, both teams are facing a stalemate on both sides of the field. So it's not great to watch. But look, we got some exciting ends. We'll get on to the Austin Stacks finish. Jesus, what penalty takers they have in Austin Stacks. I think Eamon Fitzmaurice called them townies. The townies can take take penalties because they probably play a bit of soccer. Villages have soccer teams too. But anyways, that's the kind of perception out there. Kilmacrokes did the double. So they deserve a lot of credit for that. And like, I mean, this was obviously coming on the back of an absolutely deplorable Mayo final. And a hard enough watch the night before. 22 minutes before we saw a score in this game, Lee. Like, I mean, it was like, can we take any more of this? It felt like homework. It felt like this is like, you know, sitting down, you love this job and then it feels like work. 22 minutes and it was a goal. In fairness, Alan Connolly scored an absolute brilliant goal. Incredibly, Kilmacrokes scored 1 point in the first half. They had 4 shots at goal. This is Kilmacrokes. Like, I mean, it was absolutely bizarre. Their manager, Robbie Brennan, in fairness, St. Jude's did go very, very defensive. And you can kind of understand it from an underdog's point of view. You can probably understand the Belmullet tactics as well from an underdog point of view. Robbie Brennan said they were probably more defensive than we thought that they'd be. And that probably caught us. It worked up until the last couple of minutes. So maybe Kilmacrokes were taken by surprise. Jude's had been racking up bigger scores coming into this final. We wouldn't have seen them playing. I'm trying to make excuses for why Kilmacrokes were so terrible in that first half.
Yeah, it was a really slow start. And like you say, it took 20 minutes before there was any score. And I'm just glad that it was a really good score in the end. Gavin McMenamin broke through, dropped the shoulder and laid it off to Alan Connolly, who buried it brilliantly. And it sort of wakened everybody up a little bit, thank God. But from Kilmacrokes' point of view for the first half, I don't know if it's that big a surprise that St. Jude's were so defensive. I mean, you just said it yourself. They're the underdogs going into the final. They were very defensive in the 2018 final. Much to their own detriment, that's what they were talking about in the lead up to this, that they need to go forward more and try to rack up big scores. So I'm not too sure if it is much of an excuse, to be honest. Look, they came to the front in the end, you know, big players stepped up in the last 10 minutes for Crokes and they finally broke through. But I can't think of any real reason. Like, I wouldn't say that there was a huge shock that they were defensive.
Yeah, but Robbie Brennan saying they were more defensive than they expected. So, like, yeah. I mean, I'm kind of only going by what he's saying. Only for Keane O'Connor's goal, they were in big trouble. Like, there's no doubt about this. They were 5 points down with 18 minutes to go. They didn't, Kilmacrokes, I'm not saying they were terrible in the first half and much better in the second half. They weren't. I think Jude's dropped back an awful lot and got nervous and, you know, they'd never won it before and all these things conspire. Keane O'Connor, for a game that was very low on risk-taking, like, there wasn't even a goal on when this man got that. He conjured a goal almost out of nothing, Niall. Like, I mean, he deserves all the credit here. There wasn't a goal on. There was barely a goal on when he shot.
Yeah, like, in fairness, like, that was the win in the game there. Like, that was the only difference between the sides, like, because the whole game, there was lads getting the ball in the position that Keane O'Connor was, and they were kind of
pawning it off
and it was going to the next lad. But he kind of took the risk and there was lads sticking to their own men and he got the gap. And then he got down to kind of one-on-one with his man and he buried it. It was right into the corner of the net. Like, it was a brilliant finish from him, in fairness. And, like, it was a low-scoring game, but that was definitely a score that deserved to win the game. Like, because, like, you could see, in fairness, like, St. Jude's were probably happy for 50 minutes. You could see why they played as they did, because it looked like they were going to win the game. But it took that moment of genius from Keane O'Connor, and fair play to him because he won it for them.
Yeah. In fairness, Kilmacrokes didn't play well in either final, were, you know, second best and have won the double now. So, like, I mean, they deserve a lot of credit. It's kind of almost like they're such a big club. That's like the small village club mentality, you know, the Loughmore Castellini type mentality. And they deserve a lot of credit for that. In a weird way, the Keane O'Connor goal, and I'd nearly compare it to the Ivan Parker goal for Austin Stacks the other night, which was an absolute screamer. Both of them were scored with a man standing right in front of them, right? So it's almost like they used the man, almost like darts, where you're going for a double, Lee, and you put one just outside the bed and then the next one, that'll guide the next one in. If you just stick it on the outside of this player's leg, the goalie won't see it. And there's a good chat, you know, there's only one place it can go. Do you know what I'm talking about? Sometimes you can use a player as a guide.
Yeah. I mean, it's a really opportunistic sort of goal, though. I mean, like, you got to get it absolutely right if that's what you're attempting to do. And then the Keane O'Connor one, way it's so interesting too, is that, like, he gets the ball from a standing position. And this last couple of weeks, we were talking about how you need to be running off the shoulder to break these defences down and high lines and all of that. But he it was a free kick. He takes it. He gets it back. He's from a standing position. And then he just takes off, bends his run in round, cuts inside. And sometimes when you do that and you try to be brave, space does just open up in front of you, and all of a sudden no one sees where it came from. But as you mentioned, it never actually seemed like that happened for him. You know, even when he took the goal, it didn't really seem like a huge goal chance. But the person in front of him maybe did help out. It half obstructed the goalkeeper's view as well. And when you have a small target to hit, then it's harder to save it too. And he hit it perfectly and it found its way into the bottom of the net.
Yeah, we saw referee changes in his mind yesterday as well. He deserves an awful lot of credit for this. All through my football career, probably because I, you know, at times I could get obsessed about what referees, a bad decision against you. And, you know, it was something that I made that mistake right throughout my career. Even at the end, I'd get fixated on a referee and I'd question everything then. And it's like you'd be losing your mind. And always, all up along underage, the management in Portlaoise would always say, did you ever see a referee change in his mind? And the answer would be no. Leave him alone. He won't. But he changed his mind. And the umpires deserve all the credit here now, because it's clearly outside the box. This is the penalty for Kilmacud Crokes. Clearly outside the box. Referee gave it. And you could see on the camera, the umpire was very, one of them in particular, was very forceful. You knew by the way he was saying it, referee comes out, no penalty. Very impressive umpiring. We give umpires a lot of stick when they kind of just stand there with their hands behind their backs and don't get involved. But this lad put his foot down and made the right call, absolutely.
Yeah, a lot of the time you would hear that about umpires, that they just stand there and they might have the best view of a decision, but they don't make their voice heard. Like, but they got onto the ref in fairness and told him straight away. Like, I thought the ref was very good throughout the game, in fairness to him. And like, even when he was given that free,
he actually had a better view than the umpires of
that.
He
did, and he was right there and he pointed. He was so confident, like. But in fairness to him, like, he did go straight into the boys. The boys probably called him in. But it was the right decision in the end, and an important decision in the game too. But I actually thought he was very good throughout the game. He just seemed very kind of sharp and knew what he was doing.
Yeah, no, he wasn't too bad. One other thing before we move off this game is Robbie Brennan was asked about Paul Mannion after the game, Lee. And he says, my own opinion, he says no. He's asked, would he be back? My own opinion, no. I think that's it. I think that's the last you'll see of Paul for Dublin. I'd say he'll answer that question, but I would think that's it. What he's done in the game is absolutely phenomenal for Dublin and now for Kilmacud, etc. And like, I mean, I don't know, maybe I'm reading too much into that. Is he overstepping the mark by making that announcement for Paul Mannion? Because he's saying, in my opinion. But come on, don't tell me that Robbie Brennan hasn't talked to Paul about this. Like, I mean, he's his manager. You know, like, I mean, that's an informed opinion. He, like, unless Paul said, look, I don't want to talk about it. If, you know, if you're asked, tell them I'm not going back. He wanted him to do it. For me, he's overstepping the mark unless Paul had told him. Like, we're all on for honesty from managers. But like, I mean, you've just announced Paul Mannion is finished with Dublin here.
Yeah, I mean, he effectively just retired him from the county game there, you know, before Paul Mannion even had a chance to. And like, and Paul Mannion did an interview at the end, and, you know, at the end, and there was no mention of it, you know, straight from the horse's mouth. So it is a strange one. I was very surprised when he came out and said, I don't think he will go back ever again. You know, I think that's the last you've seen of him in a Dublin jersey. Quite an outrageous statement to make. And he obviously knows more than we do. But yeah, like you said, like the fact that he's actually taken this opportunity to make it public, and maybe he's trying to, I don't know, persuade Paul Mannion to stick to his word, and maybe told him on the sly or just at the start of the season that he doesn't think he will go back to Dublin, and hopefully this will put a little bit more pressure on him to keep him staying. But from Paul Mannion's point of view at the start of the season, when we're looking at he's not going to play county, he's just going to focus on club, you're probably thinking, oh well, he's probably going to lose a medal here, you know, because Dublin are definitely going to win the All-Ireland. Will Kilmacud Crokes win the Dublin Championship? You know, it's definitely not a sure thing. But, you know, he came out the winner in the end, really. You know, Dublin didn't have, well, a disastrous season by their own standards, and he's now the Dublin County champion.
Yeah, no, exactly. How did he get man of the match? Jesus, like, when in doubt, when in doubt, there was no outstanding Kilmacud kind of, you know, player that was outstanding man of the match. But like, I mean, Paul Mannion didn't play well at all yesterday, you would say. Like, I mean, he barely got a kick of it.
I suppose when there's so few scores in a game and...
Yeah. Well, when in doubt, go for the county star, right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I presume that's the way it works.
He did score 2 or 3 points as well, didn't he?
Like,
he was tipping away. Yeah, like, it definitely wasn't his best game. Like, he missed a few balls early on that he'd usually be picking up, like, no bother at all to him. But, yeah, it is. It's kind of, if in doubt, give it to the star man.
That's how it works. So, Loughmore, Castellini are halfway to the double. Like, I mean, they needed a last-minute goal. Like, I mean, this club, like, I mean, there's no, you just can't say enough good things about them. So, like, I mean, we saw the John McGrath goal. All the McGraths set this up. So, like, I mean, they're 2 points down. They're 1 point down. And they have a free. It's not 45 metres out, but 40. Right in the middle of the goals. You'd fancy a club free taker to kick this. All right? And that would have drawn it up, Niall. So he drops it short into the goalkeeper's hands. And, like, I mean, you know, disappointment there immediately. Not for Loughmore Castellini. The way Clonmel Commercials had the ball then, goalkeeper played it out. They hunted Clonmel Commercials down in packs, in twos and threes, and hounded them into losing the ball. And I think, did Brian McGrath give it to... You can take it from there.
It was, yeah, Brian McGrath...
They won it around the top of the D.
Yeah, Brian McGrath was the man who... He got a great tackle in, and I'm not sure which Clonmel defender it was, but he got the tackle in, and he was bottled up straight away, like as often you are when you dispossess someone. But he threw a little dummy. He kind of... He kept it, bided his time, like with the composure that all the McGraths have. And it was Brian McGrath into Kieran McGrath, who'd be his cousin, into another cousin, Liam, who then gave the pass to John, and John did the rest. Like, it was...
Buried it.
It was fairy tale. Like, it was some finish by John as well, you'd have to say, because he just took it and barely even caught it and had it gone straight away then.
Of course, he could have hand-passed it over the bar there for the draw.
He could have, yeah, but in the form he's in, he'd be going for the juggler anyway. But no, I was listening to it on Tip FM. I just turned it on with like 15 minutes to go, and you hear that Loughmore are 3 points down, and you're like, right, they're in business here now, like, because that's what they've been doing all year. They just come from behind,
yeah.
And it doesn't seem to matter how far they're down. They just, when it comes towards the finish, they get it back to a point and they get it closer again. But the man who got it back to a point was Liam McGrath. And Liam McGrath, like, he was obviously a brilliant footballer, captain Tipsy All-Ireland minor title in 2011. But, like, he was missing last year because he was in Australia. He scored the equalising point in the hurling last week for them. He scored the point that, you know, because when you're 2 points down, only 2 minutes to go, like, you're not in a great spot. But when it gets to 1 point, you're really in the game. And he got a very good point there yesterday to bring him back. Like, so, like, it's brilliant from him, and it shows that he probably is the difference in Loughmore this year. I mean, like,
yeah, I never thought of that. You lose a player in Loughmore, you lose it off both. You lose a good player off both teams,
exactly.
which is obviously. But like, they were 1-2 to no score down after 5 minutes. They're always coming from behind. They're always like never say die. I thought it was very interesting. Lee, their manager Frankie McGrath, said after game, he was asked, like, when you know, they obviously have to replay against Thurles next weekend. It's next weekend, isn't it? They didn't get that extra week after. They weren't allowed that. So it's next weekend. And he was asked, when are you going to start turning your attention onto Thurles? And he said, we started turning our attention onto Thurles in the warm down there. So, like, if he did the warm down from winning the county football final, he's talking to them about the county hurling final the following week. Like, what a time to be alive in Loughmore Castellini.
No, it's absolute fairy tale stuff. I mean, like, it's just typifying everything that you would, like, a real picturesque view of the GAA in terms of dual clubs and going out and winning both codes. And you just bag a county final, no problem. End of the warm down, and you're talking about winning another one. Like, I mean, I don't even know how that speech would even go. Just like, right, lads, calm down, you know, or would you take it probably a more positive outlook, being like, see this feeling, let's let this feeling continue, and we're going to take it in the next week, and we're going to create history, and we'll go down in history in both codes as this legendary club with all these great players. It's just fantastic to see, and I kind of, who obviously has no affiliation with either club, but I certainly hope that they'll do it.
He was probably trying to get them to actually stretch after the game, because was there any more pointless exercise than trying to get lads to stretch after a match? Have you ever actually stretched, or do you just go into the stretching position and chat?
Yeah, you kneel down just, there.
You kneel and you down kinda, and you kneel down.
Half reach for your hamstring, but you're only going for your knee, really.
Yeah. So I think maybe Frankie was trying to inspire them to actually stretch for injury prevention, because there was two of them injured yesterday, wasn't there?
Yeah, like, which made the achievement all the more remarkable for them yesterday, like, because John McGrath or John Maher would probably be like their main man as a footballer. Like, he was
one of
Tip's best footballers in the last few years. He eventually committed to the hurlers, but he was out before the game with a hamstring problem, and like, he'd be a huge loss. Brian McGrath as well, sure, he's had the broken thumb. He played last weekend. He only came on in the football on Sunday, like, but he came on to make the difference. And he was interviewed after the game, and I just thought it was a brilliant interview. You could hear the kind of emotion in his voice, and he was like when you know the person beside you is empty in the tank, and when you're doing the exact same thing, he just says it's an unbelievable feeling. And that seems to be what they're doing in Loughmore. They're just emptying themselves every single week, like, and every one of them is doing it, and that's why they are where they are. Like,
yeah, it's an interesting one whether they would have gone on the beer last night. We know that they're obviously, that was their 16th weekend, and next weekend is their 17th weekend. So they are running on empty. And I'm always for going out after a match because I think, you know, the closure on the game, I think the camaraderie and the team spirit, they don't need any camaraderie and team spirit. Like, there probably isn't a closer knit group of players. Like, and, you know, they go out last night. Today might be a bit of a write-off. You know, the legs will be sore. It'll be even sore when you're dehydrated. I'm not promoting not going out for a pint after a county final. I don't know. If I heard Frankie told them not to, you know, to have two or three pints and go home, I wouldn't be too critical of that, Lee.
Yeah, no, it's probably one of the very, very rare situations where you wouldn't encourage the lads to go for a pint after a game, like, or after winning your championship. Got to be hard to imagine that they didn't go for at least two or three, but if they're anything like me, you know, they'll have two, three, turns four or five, and then they're not getting you out of there anyway. But you can see, like, the promise, I suppose, is sort of like a cart and stick sort of situation. You go, think of the rip we're going to go on if we win this double, you know, and you sort of put it to them like that. That could be the only way of maybe convincing them. Just on the Clonmel side of things as well, I was just reading something. Apparently they're kicking off a little bit. They conceded 27 frees while Loughmore only conceded 11. And I was just wondering, like, I obviously not seeing the game, and I don't know, now I listen to it on the radio, but like, that's a lot of frees to be conceding 27, and so much more than your opposition. You can sort of see why that they're annoyed about it.
Yeah, maybe that's the case. Maybe it's just a romance of Loughmore. The referees are being a little bit biased. We didn't see the match, so we're not going to comment. We don't want to take away from the Loughmore win either. Another thing, whether they go on the beer, like, imagine if they lose the Thurles and then they're drowning in the Sars and they never get a chance to actually, you know, I don't know. I think I don't know.
I'd say
they've gone out or not.
I'd say they surely went for a few, maybe a few quiet ones, Wooly, but I doubt there was anyone dancing on tables like Ken Hogan was in Ireland.
In Cork, Middleton won. Glen Rovers had got it back to a draw. Middleton flew out into the lead here, Niall. Ger Fitzgerald said afterwards, their manager, "Overall, we showed fierce fighting spirit, fierce drive, fierce determination, and we held out coming down the stretch, which is a sign of our resilience. We wouldn't have been associated with us." Like, would Middleton seem as a bit of a soft touch without that, you know, resilience and all those things he's talking about? And is this win, you know, maybe, I'm almost thinking there might be criticism of Conor Lehan. He was brilliant, scored 13 points. He's turned that corner. Middleton have turned that corner. And maybe that's a criticism of Cork as well. Could they turn that corner too?
Yeah, like, I wouldn't have known that they were, like, I'd have never associated that with them. I know they won the county championship in 2013. They were there again in 2018 and they lost to Imokilly. Like, Imokilly are obviously, like, you know, they're the kind of divisional side. It'd be tough to beat them. But no, it was a great win for Middleton yesterday, because I'd say Glen Rovers were probably favourites going into it. You know, like, all the finals that they've been in, this was their third final in a row.
Five losses and two wins out of since 2010.
In 11 years, yeah. Like, and to lose three in a row, like, is definitely, it's very disappointing for a club like them, like, you know, such powerhouses. But Middleton and Sir Conor Lehan, he was just on fire. Like, he scored, I think it was 5 points from play in the end. Like, and when he's on form, as we said on Thursday, like, he's a world beater and it's impossible to stop him. Like,
well, Ben O'Connor's obviously in coaching them. Like I said, Ger Fitzgerald is the manager. Ben O'Connor is in coaching him, and Ben didn't mince his words afterwards anyway. So Conor Lehan was dropped. Like, there's no question that he was dropped from Cork last year. And I wouldn't be overly critical of it. Like, I mean, he'd been really wishy-washy for two or three years. Like, and clearly we said before, confidence was down, getting taken off, not being able to get a run, you know, and get that kind of, you know, momentum, and that, you know, that he seems to thrive on. Ben O'Connor said, "Look, if there's eight or nine forwards better than him in the county, we don't know anything about hurling." So he's not messing around. He said, they'll say, "Oh, he's back in form." Well, I was down here last year and Connor got 330, 119 from frees in three matches. There weren't too many other inter-county players got 330 in three matches. So, like, I mean, he is making that call. But, like, I mean, that was in the club championship. The reality is he wasn't on form, Niall, at inter-county level.
Yeah, like, from when you've seen him at Cork, I'd say the last 2 years he was kind of just maybe flattering to deceive a small bit. Like, you're expecting so much out of Conor Lehan just because of how gifted he is. And it just didn't seem to be working out for him. And I'd say, like, Kieran Kingston dropping him, like, he probably had it in mind that this might be a good thing for Conor Lehan, you know, because maybe like he was playing well for the club, obviously, but when he wasn't doing it for Cork, or maybe he wasn't doing it in training, he just thought that he needed something like this, and it's definitely given him the kind of encouragement that he needed, because he's back to his very best now.
Yeah, no, he definitely is. On to Offaly now. So St Rinagh's won their third county title in a row. They scored a goal in the 62nd minute to break Hoole Derry hearts, and their manager Ken Hogan joins us on the line now. How's it going, Ken?
Great, Willie. Great today. Thanks very much.
It's fair to say you had a super Sunday yesterday.
Yeah, I took the frost off the window yesterday morning at 7:30, Willie, because in fairness, the Tip Camogie final was fixed for 11:30, but both the county, but they couldn't get an alternative date, so in fairness, they brought it forward an hour to 10:30, which was a huge help, and I'd like to thank the Camogie board and my Carkey Borough Club for agreeing to that. So it meant that we had an early start, 10:30 start, and that's when it all the dreams came true, I suppose.
Yeah, so you won. That was a Camogie County final with your own club, Laura. 10:30. Like, how do you even get ready for a 10:30 start? Like, I mean, they're not long up out of the bed at that stage.
Yeah, the funny thing about it is we played in Carrigansure at 11:00 in the championship. It was an away game against Carrig Swans, and we'd be in Dublin quicker from Laura than Carrig, but. So we were used to the early morning start, so we had to be in Carrig at 10:00. That meant leaving at 8:00. So the girls were all there yesterday morning at 9:30, and so were the Mycarkey girls. And all systems go. There was nobody worrying about anything. Even a couple of the girls were up yesterday morning milking cows for their dads because they couldn't sleep with the excitement. So it just goes to show you a rural community, Willie, what it can do for teams.
Yeah, it's absolutely fantastic. So you won that game by a point. I'm sure there was extra time on your mind. That would have messed up your plans for the day heading off to Tullamore.
Yeah, it would have messed up my plans, because I had actually planned to go with 10 minutes to go. I'd actually told our physio, John Harding, you know, I have Aidan McIntyre, Niall's father, with me. Great man, Mark Houlihan, you know, and Carolyn O'Mara and Bernie Cleary in the sideline and Pauline Hochter. But I had actually told John Harding, John, you take over. If I have to go, I go with 10 minutes to go. But you couldn't go. It was nerve thing. It went down to the wire, you know. And to win that championship after so much heartbreak in the club, you know, this Camogie club was almost defunct, really, Willie. And the girls kept it going. We had four mothers playing yesterday, would you believe it? And lost two players to Dubai, two great players, Cueva Kennedy and Kate O'Mara. So absolutely fantastic finish. And of course, Clodagh McIntyre, our county player, you know, she soldiered with us from the very start, and she played a really outstanding part with all the girls yesterday.
Right, sounds brilliant. So did you get a chance to run on the field, do a bit of celebrating, and then get the hell out of there?
I did. I had to meet the players, because they gave me so much throughout the year and in the last couple of years, and I couldn't let it go. I had to get out on that pitch. And in fairness, the game went to pretty much the time. It started at 10:30. I was leaving the rag at 10 to 12 with my wife Joan and a great clubman, Michael Liffey, and we headed for Borr, met Andy Smith in Borr. Andy's my trainer, of course, with St. Rinagh's, former Galway hurler. So we headed for Tullamore, and Ewan and Martin had everything set up in Tullamore for us, our warm-up area and that. So we were there about 1:10. So in actual fact, there was a sense of relief just to get to the venue, first of all.
Yeah, I'm sure there was. And like, I mean, the final then, that it was kind of a scrappy game, was it, Ken?
Yeah, well, any expectations I had, or any, I was really brought down to earth, I can tell you, with the match, because it was really squeaky bum time, because it was just one of those dogfights. Colm, Cool Derry, I knew exactly what they'd bring to the table. Fantastic club, huge tradition, and great record against Rinagh's. You know, they beat them in 15 and 86 and 1980. Martin Hannamy and David Hughes had reminded the lads, their selectors of me, of what had happened to them. So they had a huge record on St. Rinagh's, you know, and we obviously going for 3 in a row, with that little bit of pressure on us as well. But it just went down to the wire. We had to empty the subs bench, Woolley. It was one of those days, you know, when players had to be used. And I suppose the importance of just having the lads with you on the sidelines, I suppose some lads think they'll never get an opportunity, or they're frustrated not getting in. They got in, and, you know, they finished the job yesterday. It was it went down to the nerve-tingling thingness, I can tell you that.
So, like, I mean, explain to us, I'm only reading match reports, hoping to see some highlights on TG Cahir tonight. Like, I mean, you were 2 points down and you got a 65, you scored that. So now you're only 1 point down. How did you end up scoring a goal? Was it a point effort that dropped short, or how did this goal come about?
In actual fact, what had actually happened, to go back on it, Niall Wynne had come on and had played very well, and he flicked the ball back to Aidan Tracy, and Aidan had an open goal. We thought the net was going to shake, but Trevor Corcoran made an unbelievable block with his body, and it went off his shoulder out for 65. And Aidan actually stayed inside. He's our free taker, Woolley. And he stayed inside. He was asking Mahi Maloney, who ultimately got mad at the match, to lob the ball in. And I actually, the linesman was chasing me out in the middle of the pitch, because I actually had to run out and tell Aidan to come out and take the 65. Because it could mean it was a 1 point game.
Right.
To give us a chance of an equaliser, you know, and I could see the clock to 61:25 or something like that. So Aidan came out and, thank God, potted the point, because then it put Golderry under pressure. It was a 1 point game. And we got the ball back up again, but it was just fantastic perseverance by our forwards. Golderry back did win the possession, but he was turned over. And from the turnover, the ball ended up, you know, getting in around the square. There was a lot of blocks, a lot of hoofs, guys had opportunities, but it just happened to pop up for Stephen Quirk. And Stephen nailed it, of course, on the volley, actually on the volley, and was a crowd of bodies. I don't know how it got in, but it got in. So it meant there was only one last attack for Golderry. The ball came down, but of course our guys, our backs were absolutely brilliant all day. Both back lines were absolutely outstanding, Woolley. And our backs held out, and I think it was 64 minutes when Kieran Dooley blew the game. So just a fairy tale finish, but yeah. Kildare had done the same St. Ryan's in 2015. Joe Brady had got a last ditch goal. So it was karma, really. Like, the, you know, the tables were totally turned.
Right.
But a rousing finish. It was a dour game, but an absolutely rousing finish.
What a finish. Like, the balance of power is shifting. Like, it's usually the team on the up gets these lucky breaks, isn't it, Ken? Like, I mean, it's fairy tale stuff. Like, in 15, that wouldn't have happened, G, but now I suppose you're after winning two and that bit of confidence, these things just happen out, seem to happen like that.
Yeah, it's been a long campaign, really, Woolley, because obviously the 2020 final was, at the 11th hour, was called off. Obviously, Croke Park called off the last county finals of the last Sunday in November last year, as you well remember. And it meant that we had to play the 2020 final in August against Kilcormac Killahey, our old rivals. And it meant that we had to peak for two finals. And I could actually see, you know, even though the lads were really giving it everything, you could see there was a little bit of staleness coming in, you know. And from that point of view, I suppose, that's why substitutes play a huge part. And it's not the team you start with, Woolley, it's the team really that you finish with. That's so important, and every guy that came in there and every guy that put his body on the line was doing it for the club. And I think it was the real hallmarks of what can happen. You can never, you know, underestimate the people that you have behind you in the bench as well. And also you have to prepare for every eventuality, and everything happens yesterday. You know, we came in with Luke O'Connor, he had a serious rib injury, and you play an unfit player. But if it was a three sub era, Woolley, you wouldn't have played him, because you can't afford with three subs. But with five subs, you can't afford to take the risk, and you know that there's somebody to come in. So Luke didn't manage to, obviously, yeah, he was under severe pressure during the game, and we had to replace him. So all those permutations turn up, of course.
It's interesting, like, I mean, with the delayed final from last year, and even talking from a Laois perspective, Clough Ballacolla won it in August and won it again. Port Arlington won it in August and won it again. Now Yeave won it in August and won it again. I suppose when you win one and there isn't another one till the following year, there's no momentum to carry you over. Whereas, you know, it is a long season, but at the same time, that win, you know, you actually got tangible momentum from it.
Yeah, but the funny thing about it is, like, we had a very tough group, you know, in the 2021 campaign, and we ended up then playing Burr, who gave us a right arse beating, Woolley, to say the truth, by 12, 13 points, and they actually failed to qualify because of score difference or head-to-head.
Right.
And I think that brought us down to earth with a bang, because we just had to get our act together. And like any rural community, and you've seen it yourself, Woolley, like, there's guys travelling, there's lads working in Intel, Maynooth, Dublin, Ronan Hughes and Donald Moran coming from Shannon, and, you know, they're on winter roads. You know, the beauty of the state championship is great, but it's winter. you know, facilities, you know, we're lucky we have the floodlights, but these guys are travelling on the road at 8 o'clock at night and travelling home, you know, to get back to base at midnight. So we can't underestimate these guys, the absolute commitment to give to it. And that's not just our club, it's every club in the country that's involved in competition at this time of the year, you know. So just hats off to everybody. I think it was a savage championship in Offaly. You earn every little thing, every ounce you earn it. And with Cool Derry and with Kilcormac Killahi or Borough, any of those outstanding teams, they'll put you to the wire. And you earn everything. You don't deserve anything in life, as you well know, Willie. You earn it. And we just got there.
Yeah, exactly. So this is your sixth Offaly County title. You went to school in Borough, obviously, so the connections there. You won one with Borough in 1991. I didn't realise that until today. You were still hurling with Tip at that stage. You won two with Cool Derry, which I knew about, and got them to an All-Ireland final, and three more with St Rhina's now. So, like, I mean, it's not a bad record you have in Offaly.
Look, there's huge connections with Offaly. Like, I went to school, obviously, in Borough. We shop in Borough. I'm just across the bridge, Woolley, just across the bridge, and my father refereed a number of Offaly county finals in the 50s and 60s. So we have a huge connection with Offaly, and I suppose I'm very close to the border there. You know, Cool Derry was only 10, 12 minutes. Banner is only 15 minutes for me, you know.
Right.
And obviously I got caught in 91 as a kid. I got caught in 91 when I was playing, and of course the Babs was manager. If it was any other manager, I wouldn't have been managing a club team, I can tell you. But the Babs didn't mind. He said, "Work away, Ken. Once you're standing in the goals and getting in the way of the ball, just work away there. Do what you want, you know." So it's different times, I suppose. Different times, but great innings with these great clubs. And, you know, there's plenty of heartache as well, Woolley, involved in this management trade, as you well know. And you take the good days. But the huge fillip for me is, you know, a savage loves his native shore. The huge fillip for me was winning the junior championship with Laura Gerrard yesterday, because they gave me absolutely everything, blood, guts, and thunder. And you know, you always say that the team that wins is the team that wants to win most. And this team had suffered heartache. And to get over the line yesterday in the junior camogie was unbelievable, you know.
Yeah, well, it's always the best with obviously with your own club. Like, I mean, you went back to Laura last night. A little birdie told me there was some dancing going on tables in Mars. Now, whether you were up to that or not, I don't know.
How would any table hold me up, Woody? But I can tell you this much. Fair play to Mars. They're a great host, and they have a lot of outdoor facilities. And it actually suited us to be outdoors, because they have fantastic facility, but the girls are an absolute high. You know, we brought down the cup, the Sean Robbins Cup in Banagher. We brought down the hill of Banagher down, and huge crowd turned out. All the kids were absolutely thrilled, because obviously with the pandemic we couldn't have a parade or anything like that. Brought it down the hill, and like, sport is brilliant. We've had a lot of heartache in the club in the last couple of weeks, no more than any other club. And Conor Canty, you know, our three in a row captain, his father underwent, brain surgery last week, would you believe it? And came through it, thankfully, and we wish him all the best. Simon Lyons, a great St. Rhina stalwart, you know, ill at the moment, but he's going to come good because he's such a positive man. And in Cool Derry, they had their heartache as well. So from everybody's point of view, sport, you know, it's a huge kind of save for us all. It's a huge outlet, and it gives us the momentum to keep living and keep going, you know.
Yeah, no, it definitely does. And just mentioning Cool Derry there, Ken, I presume, you know, you go into the losers' dressing room and you say one or two words, and a lot of the time, you know, players aren't listening and the manager's not too bothered about it. I presume that was one of the more difficult one of them you had to do.
Yeah, and to the very same dressing room, my last day with Ben, Cool Derry, was in 2014 against Kilcormac Killahi in the semi-final. And it was, you know, I choked when I was speaking to the players, and it was the same yesterday. I went into those set of players, absolute legends, but I must salute the Cool Derry club, the respect that they paid me, and how gracious they were in defeat. But most of all, I think, you know, all the elder statesmen were there, Brian Carroll and the lads, they have been wonderful servants. But the young guys that's carrying that jersey for Cool Derry now, the young fellas that have come through, they're absolutely outstanding yesterday, you know, and they're leaving a great legacy in Cool Derry. They'll never be down. They might be down today, but they'll never be out. They'll be challenging for honours in the future again. And It was heartwarming to go into them and the welcome they gave me. But at the end of the day, the job had to be done, and we were just lucky enough to get over the line.
Yeah, exactly. So where are the points today? Is it Laura or is it Banagher?
Yeah, well, I spent my night in Laura last night, and funny enough, I'm working today because that was the work schedule that I have. I'm at lunchtime at the moment now, Willie. So we just have to be conscious of the fact of keeping safe. I can't say that enough. But the most important thing, I suppose, is that we do enjoy ourselves and have the crack together and enjoy your own space. And I suppose the lads will be having a liquid breakfast today, and I'm sure our girls are probably. Could be in Borre, actually, that you mentioned that the very town of Borre could be buzzing today with a lot of liquid breakfast. So, looking forward to meeting them around the town today.
Well, if those girls had a match at 10:30, I'd say they must be dying today. They must have been in the pub at 12:30 yesterday. I'd say they were in the right form by the time you got back to Laura. Come here, Ken, I won't keep you any longer. I know you're in work. We won't tell Anthony Daly that you went on a rival podcast. We'll keep that between me and you.
Yeah, well, Dalo is a very versatile man himself. He gets around himself, so I'm sure at some stage we'll even get down to visit Murty Brown's and enjoy the fruits of our work. So listen, great talking to you, Willie.
Thanks a lot, Ken. I appreciate it.
Anytime, bud. Take care. Bye bye.
Great stuff from Ken there. Obviously, a huge name in Laura. Niall, you obviously could surpass him with this fitness, Ireland's fittest family, now that you're a TV star. He wasn't dancing on tables. Your sister was the one dancing on tables, Niall.
Well, I was talking...
Get your information right.
I was on the phone to my father this morning, and he told me that Ken Hogan was the man dancing on tables. And actually, I brought my sister up to Dublin last night, and she said she was dancing on a table. And then she looks across, and Ken Hogan was beside her dancing on a table. So I think maybe his memory is gone. It could be something to do with the drinking, but it was a great day for him. And like everyone in Laura, you'd be delighted for him, like, because it's not easy for Ken when he's training Ryan. Sure, he must be with them 3 or 4 nights a week. But when we were training with the lads, Ken would be over with the girls, and he'd very rarely miss a session. He was there 2 or 3 nights a week, and like to do that with a junior B camogie team, like he'd know his daughter wasn't on the team, and like he's.
Well, that was the one I was going. I immediately asked you. He said, you know, has he got a daughter on it or something like that? And you said no, and that is. Like the definition of a volunteer. And like, I mean, I'm not going to say that, like, when Mannix and Arias start playing GA, I'm sure I'll get over their teams. But for me, that's spending time with them. I'd probably go and watch it anyway. I don't know. But to go and selflessly take over a team with no direct connection to it, like, I mean, that's what makes it, you know, all the more impressive.
Yeah, like, he's just, like, you'd always know with Ken, in fairness, that he's just a complete fanatic, like, and he absolutely lives and breathes, like, coaching at the moment, like, and... He always has done that, and like, I suppose there's no, in Junior B Camogie, there's no glamour in that, like, you know, yeah, you're yeah. not, like, he's making the headlines today, but you wouldn't usually, like, if Banagher didn't win on the same day, there'd be no headlines for the Laura Camogie team, like, so, no it's just...
He's put you on the map today,
now.
He's,
for the
put,
game, yeah,
he's so. Put you on the map. Talking about no glamour, Lee, let's get on to the Mayo County Final, because there was certainly no glamour in this, very, very low on quality, probably the only bit of quality in the game... in the first half anyway, was James Ruddy's goal. That was fantastic. And like, I mean, I sound like a broken record. What was unique about James Ruddy's goal? 2 bloody kick passes. So it was McHale who kick passed down to Aidan Ormond, and Aidan Ormond gave a lovely diagonal ball, 2 kick passes. Now Bill Mullett's defensive system has been torn apart because they can't drift players back, and James Ruddy, who could have been lucky to be still on the field at this stage. He gave a terrible hit on the Belmullet cornerback, ran straight into his back for no reason at all, and then got a yellow card for a high tackle. He could have been gone off. In fairness to him, he finished it really well. And I'm watching this game live going, that's game over. That was just an injury time at the end of the first half. I think that made it 1-1 to a point. But like, the way that game had been going, that goal pretty much sealed it.
Yeah, definitely. And just before the 2 kick passes, it was a turnover as well. So it just really hurts the Belmullet, you know, the way, because they would like base their whole game on not giving away possession cheaply by any means. And it's worth mentioning too, that both kick passes, you know, one went to the right side of the pitch and then the other was kicked into the left, you know, so there was a change of direction.
Switch it, yeah.
They're smart kick passes as well. Like, he's not lumping it in randomly. And then the Aidan Orm one was fantastic. It was outside the left, straight. And it was sort of, them outside the boot ones with the spin on it, they can be really hard to catch dead. Like, if you're looking to catch that as a full forward and call for a mark, you know, it can be tricky. But he sort of took took it with the momentum. As he caught it, he turned with it, left, you know, that spinned his man, and then it left him one-on-one with the goalkeeper, and I think he put it underneath his legs in the end. I watched it a couple of times. I'm nearly sure he nutmegged him, but it was a really, really tidy finish, and it's just a lovely moment of, like, a couple of flashes of brilliance in what was overall a pretty dull game. Wasn't enough to say that the whole game was exciting, but it was definitely as the best 10 seconds in the entire game, for sure.
It was, and the finish is underrated because he opened up his whole body to put it into the, you know, the right hand corner and whipped it back to the other side. Didn't whip it back the whole way to the corner, but it did enough to kind of throw the goalkeeper off. So, like, I mean, Ruddy deserves credit, even though, like I said, he was lucky to stay on the field. Not only was it low on quality, you know, defensive game. Now, in fairness to him, this was a very heavy pitch, not like Parnell Park or this, you know, this Ballina's a boggy, boggy field by the looks of it. Lee, loads of play acting and holding your face and going down. And, like, I mean, this has to be said, because if this was Tyrone or something, we'd be really going on to town about this. Mayo wouldn't be as known for it, but it was very, very noticeable in the first half. A lot of play acting and a lot of late hits and overacting then about how hurt you were. And, oh God, it was just desperate final altogether.
Yeah, that's what I was saying now, because I had the Glen match on at the same time, and every time I looked up to the TV with TG Cahar, it seemed like someone was on the floor. I wonder if it's like the tenseness of a final, especially a really defensive final like that, where scores are few and far between. So getting a free kick or conceding a free kick is absolutely dire, and then actually winning a free, especially from a scorable position, you know, can win or lose you the game. So they're really treating it like it's life or death. You know, can I really buy this free kick or not? But there was some really poor examples of people just like lying on the floor. I think both teams got a black card. Both teams did definitely get a black card, and there was loads of yellows flying out as well. And just like, I don't know, like if you're really struggling to get in a game and you can't make an impact by getting a big score, then, you know, and you're all amped up, it's final, the crowd, because the crowd were brilliant. Like, you know, they were cheering it on like it was the most exciting match ever, and we all know it wasn't. So when you get amped up, the only thing you can really do, you know, with all that amped up energy is to shoulder someone or leave in a lazy hit or just go over that line, and it definitely crossed the line a couple of times.
Yeah, there was only 4,000 at it, which I thought was a disappointing crowd for a Mayo County final. We know how fanatical they are. We know Belmullet's only a small place, but and whatever way they were positioned in the grounds, when a point would be kicked, a lot of the crowd didn't know it was a point until the umpire blew the flag. So it was this delayed kind of delayed cheer. I don't really know what to say about it. Ryan O'Donoghue obviously didn't get into the game at all. He barely got a kick of it. We're talking about Paul Mannion. He barely got a kick but scored 2 points. Ryan O'Donoghue, probably the only chance he had in the game was a goal opportunity that was blocked down brilliantly by the Knockmore, I think it was the midfielder. I suppose Ryan O'Donoghue, when they live off so much scraps and they don't score all that much and they scored goals in the previous two games, you know, he probably felt he had to go for a goal there.
Yeah, like, and Ryan O'Donoghue was like, he was the main man the whole way through the championship for Belmullet, and he was probably the man that brought them through to the final. Like, so, like, their whole hopes were nearly pinned on him. Like, it's tough enough for a lad. I think he's only 22 or 3. So, like, it's tough enough for him to have, I suppose, that much pressure, especially when you've been carrying the team all year. So when he didn't show up, when he didn't have his best game, Belmullet were always going to struggle. Like, and in fairness, Conor Heenan, he kind of half had us warned that he maybe said it in a attractive way, tried to build up this defensive thing, but if you read through the lines, you nearly could have seen it coming.
Yeah, he's an old romantic as well, Connor. He built that up to, built that final up that it was going to be fantastic stuff altogether. Jesus.
He sold us the dream.
Now I'm doubting his information now after seeing that, but I suppose nobody expected it to be as dull as it was. Knockmore captain David McHale, who played really well, he obviously lifted a cup for the second year in a row. His sister died just 2 months ago. So, like, you know, something to bring him some happiness into his life, which was, I read that today, and I was really happy about it. To be fair, Knockmore were in control of the game. Belmullet got it back to 2, and you thought maybe something was on, but they just took over again then, and it just kind of petered out. St. Lomans won the replay in Westmead. Lomans won it last year, this is their second in a row. They've been in something like 6 or 7 finals in a row, but they had a 5-point lead with 7 minutes to go, Lee, and we've been talking about Nafina, and we've been talking about extra time is very harsh on the team that throws away the lead. And then you have St. Lomans thrown away a 5-point lead with 7 minutes to go. Now there's extra time. If you're at that match, you're thinking, Jesus, here's Gary Castle now. Their tails are up. Lomans' heads are down. You know, Gary Castle should go on and win this. And Lomans went on and won it convincingly in extra time. So I just don't know what to say anymore, Leah. I'm just totally confused. I thought we had this cracked.
Well, I think I was actually against that. I didn't believe in the replays. I was all for extra time. I thought it was fair. But in this situation, yeah, no, like Gary Castle, they definitely had the momentum going forward. The goalkeeper just hit a 45, Sean Brennan. He had a 45 right at the death, I think, to equalise it. It was 110 each or something going until extra time. And you could totally see, like, from the outside looking in, you would fully expect them to sort of then rally on. But maybe experience is what's key in them sort of situations.
Yeah.
Like John Heslin, the captain, I think he scored 3 points then. He was pretty poor in the first half, and then as the game got on, he got more and more into it, and then he kicked three in extra time. Him, one of the, you know, the more experienced players, the leader, stepping up into that situation and settling his team down again, and then they were able just to take control again. And even sometimes when you do a late comeback, like a real big burst, it can take everything out of you, you know, because you did all that and you still have another, you know, half an hour to play or 20 minutes to play. Like, it can be psychologically quite draining as well.
Yeah, Shane Dempsey scored two. He would be a big player for them too. So their big players stood up. And I suppose, look, I was kind of messing there to start. If you're a favourite going into the game and you have that confidence, even if the other team come back at you, you'll still say, look, you know, it's all psychological. Whereas if you're underdogs and this is your one opportunity and it's, oh, we're nearly there. Oh, no, we've thrown that away. You know, that's where the psychology of it comes in, I suppose, Niall.
Yeah, I'd agree with what Lee like is saying there, that like Gary Castle probably thought that they had it. You know, like they were so excited after coming from 5 points down and they're delighted going into the dressing room. You nearly feel as if you've won the game, you know, and maybe you can get carried away a small bit. But yeah, like Lomans, their experience, like having been in seven finals, they're not going to be fazed heading into extra time. Like, it's just another few minutes for them, and with the big players like John Heslin and Shane Dempsey standing up, like, you know, it's a good win for St. Lomans. Like, they're very hard to beat in Westmead.
Yeah, no, they definitely are. The Nair won in Waterford. Michael Ryan is their manager, so he played with them. Michael Ryan, obviously better known for managing women's team, he's 32 All-Ireland winning ladies football teams. This is the first time he's managed his club the Nair to a county title. He lost two as a player in 1987 and 1989. We've had Michael Ryan on the show here. Love Michael Ryan. He's a great character. And I'm delighted for him that they won it. Jamie Barron was black carded with 4 minutes left. They were kind of backs to the wall kind of stuff, but they held out in the end. So congratulations to him. And he managed Bally McCarberry ladies, who won 40 in a row. Now, one thing, because I never commented on this 40 in a row thing, and sometimes I think, you know, when it's ladies football, everything I read about that was, oh, what a fantastic achievement. Where, like, if that was the men's county final, you go, what a shite championship that is. Do you know what I mean? But the reality is, 40 in a row, Lee, like, I mean, what's the point of that championship? And is there not something can be done? I think there's only three teams. Can the other two teams not amalgamate and make some sort of a bloody championship there? Like, 40 in a row. This shouldn't be congratulations. This should be how the hell do we fix this championship?
Yeah, and to be fair, I mean, after 10 in a row, 30 times ago, they probably should have been asking that question, you know, to even let it get this far, like 40 in a row. You know, when I was reading that, you know, you sort of have to read it a couple of times. You're like, 40. I actually can't be right. 40 times in a row, 40 seasons, 40 years. Like, I mean, it's just, what can you say about that? Like, that championship is obviously a dead duck. You know, they need to fix something, and they need to fix it ASAP, because it mustn't even be, do they even celebrate it anymore? Like, I mean, we talk about team, you know, like Dublin, it sort of loses its allure once you've got six in a row, when, you know, it's maybe just not as special. But after 40, I mean, it must just be a trinket that you throw into a drawer afterwards.
That's it. Like, I mean, sometimes you find yourself plum-ossing the ladies' game, whereas you wouldn't do it with the men's game.
We went down there to do a video with Michael Ryan. I think it was after they did 38 in a row, and we were chatting to Michael Ryan and his daughter, Michelle. Like, and Michael Ryan is just the most passionate man, like, I'd say I've ever interviewed. You know, like, he tells story after story. And I remember he was telling me the first day he got involved, like, he didn't want to be involved at all. His wife and his sisters were on the team, and they begged him to take over the team. And he said, right, I'll go to the first session and he said, I'll run the legs off them and they won't want me back again. And he said he came back the next week and it was 20 there and he just kept getting dragged the whole way back. And which, yeah, the 40 in a row thing is, it's a little bit, it's just hard to get your head around.
Because I saw his daughter, Michelle, she was tweeting after the 38 in a row and she was saying, oh, it's not as easy as it looks. You know, these are hard games. I mean, it's 40 in a row, Michelle. Come on. Like, I mean, Jesus, there's something has to be done there to make that championship a little bit more interesting. I suppose a little bit, you'd want to give them a little bit of credit too for winning the 40 in a row.
Yeah, you would, yeah.
I'd be more of the lines, what the hell's going on there? That's all. Oh, Derry Gonnelly beat Ennis Gillan. There's not too much to say about this one. I think that's all the county finals. They beat them well in the end. Obviously, as we said on Thursday, very young Ennis Gillan team, and their time would probably come. But there was no major talking points out of it. Because I want to talk about Austin Stack's penalty takers. Wow. There's no point in saying anything else. Like, I mean, Ivan Parker missed. Jack Barry with a bit of a Tony Cascarino type penalty, I would call it. Remember Tony Cascarino's penalty in Italia 90 where he took all he kicked the ground and just kind of ploughed it in? That was a bit like Jack Barry's penalty the other night. It was a desperate penalty, but went in. But the Austin Stacks penalty, like, GA players don't practice penalties all that much. I know Kieran Donaghy said afterwards that they were practicing him and these games are going to extra time. But Jesus Christ, they were sensational penalties, Lee. Like, they were like proper professional soccer player penalties.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, they look like they've been practicing it loads, to be fair. In terms of, like, when you hear that the game's going to go to extra time and that it has to be won on the day and that there will be penalties if necessary, I suppose it only makes sense that they do some practice for it because you got to, like, prepare for all eventualities and things like that. But I don't know if they were just staying behind and doing it for hours on the end afterwards because it was top corner, bottom corner, side of the net. You know, it felt like you just picked where they wanted to hit it and that's where it would go. In fairness, like, St. Brendan's weren't bad penalties either. It was just the one of them that missed. Ivan Parker, I think, missed.
Yeah.
Other than that, like, so a lot of them were very tidy as well. It sort of wasn't it wasn't a good look for the goalkeepers in that end because you really wait for one of them to step up and make the big heroic save.
Yeah, well, talking about goalkeepers, the St. Brendan's goalkeeper won't want to watch that game back. And whatever about the first goal, but the second goal, like, I mean, at senior club level, those goals can never happen. You're training too long in the year. Like, I remember goals like that happening at under 14 level where, you know, your goalkeeper might only fill half the goals, you know, and sometimes a high ball would be going in, your heart would be in your mouth. Oh, Jesus, you know, with the slippery hands and the fact that you're not that tall. I mean, not that tall of a goalkeeper, but there is no way ever. And I know Kieran Donaghy was coming in, but Christ, this wasn't a huge ball coming from a long distance. It was just a lobbed one from the wing. Can't let a goal in at that level, like that, Niall.
No, it was a sickener for St. Brendan's, in fairness, because the two goals were a small bit soft.
Flukes, like,
and they probably were the better team. Like, with, like, Ivan Parker was definitely the best player on the pitch, like, and they should have won that game. But the goal, yeah, like, it just looped in, and whether you either catch the ball or you just palm it away, like, it was just this. I think Kieran Donaghy was kind of coming in, and
he should have caught that ball. I don't think he even needs to palm that. It wasn't that hard of a ball to deal with, I don't think, even.
I suppose, yeah, like, lads just can make mistakes and these things happen. Like, you'd feel from a small bit because it kind of cost him in the end. Like,
just a big mistake from him, yeah, it has to be pointed out, without completely going overboard on it. But I just know if I was on the field seeing that happen, you'd be going, oh, Jesus, like, after. And another thing is, I thought Austin Stacks got a very soft free then. At the end to equalise it. And, you know, just one thing at that situation, Lee, all the pressure's on Austin Stacks at that stage. And, like, I mean, the easiest thing ever is to give them a free. And, like, just stay away from them. If they are good enough to kick a point from play, never, ever, ever give the referee an opportunity to draw it up. You know, don't even put your hands in near them. And it was almost just that rush of blood to the head. Because people always understand that, you know, the team defending a lead is under pressure. They're not. The team chasing the lead are the ones that are nervous and under pressure. They don't want to make a mistake. Don't give them the free that they desperately want, you know, that kind of a way. And Brendan's did.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it came off the back of like that, because that goal that you were talking about was a real sucker punch, you know, to them. And they're probably throwing their heads up and then they're sort of feeling the pressure. And, like, you know, like, we've had this and now it's ours to lose, and we're looking like we're going to lose it. And then that's when you start putting in the silly tackles. And, you know, Austin Stacks are not stupid either. Like, you, when you're chasing the game, you try to try to win a free kick, but not, I don't necessarily mean that you're diving or simulation or anything like that, but you try to take on two or three men, you know, try to get the momentum behind you in your run, and so that if you go down, you can sort of buy that free. And in the end, they were silly enough to give it to them, and it was the sign of, like, I don't know if lack of experience or whatever, but I mean, it must have been, it's just a hands in the head situation, because they felt like they could have won it on two or three different occasions and they just kept letting it slip.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, we can't go off that game without giving a shout out to Kieran Donaghy, who scored the winning penalty. Like, sensational. I don't know if he's 38 or 39. There was a bit of a dispute. Donaghy thinks he's 38, 39, but Darren O'Sullivan is adamant he's only 38. I thought that was funny. I thought Darren O'Sullivan was very good on it, actually. Kieran Donaghy, whether he's 38 or 39, I tend to believe Kieran Donaghy, unless he, well, maybe he added a year on just to make it, you know, sound even better. I'm 39. Mm. But what a penalty. Like, I mean, his legs, this is after extra time, a 39-year-old. I know he's only in on the edge of the square, but he's dropping back a good bit. He's up and down the field. It was a brilliant penalty. Like, I would not trust myself in that situation to score that penalty. Absolutely not. I reckon I put my hand up for it stupidly because, you know, you don't want to be the one that bitched out of it and didn't want to take a penalty. What a finish, I suppose, Niall.
When you seen him walking up to take the penalty, you just knew he was going to score. Like, he was never going to
miss.
Did you? Like,
I didn't think. Fitzmaurice was very confident. But, like, you know when you see a big man like that coming up? I wasn't that confident.
He's a skillful big man, though, isn't he? Like, you know, and he's... like, yeah, the whole way through that game, like, you could see him, he was running down, he was back in his own full back line a few times, and he was back up the field again, like, and geez, he's just he's an unbelievable goer, isn't he, in fairness? And yeah, when he's talking about his age, I'd probably give him the benefit of the doubt that he would know his own age, in fairness. But, like, Darren O'Sullivan, he did have us warned. I think he said a few of them Austin Stacks boys that they are soccer players, like, and he knew that the penalties would be good, and that's what they were. It was one lad hit one and it was right into the top corner. It was as good as I've ever seen. Like.
Yeah, yeah. And another lad rolled it beautifully into the bottom corner off the inside of his boot. There were some brilliant penalties, even like Lee says, on both sides. That's it from the county finals. There's loads of drama in the provincial championships. Lee, you were watching Unions versus Glen. Judging by the score, not an absolute classic here, but Unions would be kicking themselves. They had this game won.
Yeah, definitely not a classic by any means. It was a little like the Dublin final in that it sort of burst to life in the last 10 minutes. Glenn were without Emmett Bradley, and they were definitely missing him. And then Kieran McFall picked up a knock pretty early in the game, and it seemed to curtail him for a lot of it. He wasn't making the sort of bulging runs forward that you know him for, but he came to life sort of again in the last 10 minutes. So Union's very defensive, as you'd imagine. And Kieran McFall hits over this point to make it a point in it. Then Glenn are awarded a penalty. Stevie O'Hara, the substitute for Glenn, was 1-1 with the goalkeeper. He gets dragged down. But really weirdly, it seemed like no one in Glenn wanted to take the penalty. It passed the hands of two or three different forwards at this stage.
Ooh.
And it was Connolly McGuckin who took it in the end. And you know, he was having a good enough game, so why not? And he hits a decent enough penalty, goes right bottom corner, but the keeper gets a good save to it. And you're just thinking at this stage, well, Unions are definitely going to win it now. They're a point to the good. They've stopped the penalty. You know, they've got all the momentum. The ball works itself to Michael Warnock, who hits it an outrageous point from range to make it equal. And then from that kick out, Unions hits it to a Unions half forward. He's under pressure straight away, so he turns and fist passes it back to the goalkeeper, which of course blew up straight away for a foul right in front of the goal.
Oh, you
Danny
can't.
Callan with,
yeah, you can't go back to the goalie.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, and he knew straight away, as soon as he hit the fist pass, his hands went straight in his head, and the goalkeeper caught it and then dropped it, like, immediately and pretended like he never caught it.
Right.
And it was all sort of, the commentators couldn't really work out why the free was given at that stage, but then it was sort of clarified at the end. And it was like the easiest, but probably the most pressured kick that Danny Tallon would ever have to take in his life. But, you know, cool as you like, he slots it over the bar. And that won it for them in the end. They win by a single point, and that's Glenn's first ever win in the Ulster Championship.
Yeah.
So now they'll play, I think, Monaghan Scotstown next week in Celtic Park, and it'll be like a double header with the intermediate champion Steelstown as well. So that'll be a good watch.
So without having seen it, again, we'll see it on TG Cahir tonight. You would love, before we do this show, to see all these highlights. So when the ball, Patton obviously kicked it out to the half-back or half-forward, whichever you say, half-forward, and he gave it back to him. Yeah. Say if Patton had realised, shit, I can't catch this. Would that have gone into the net, or where was Patton on the field? Like, if Patton, because you'd blame the wing forward for passing it back to him, but I would blame Patton more, who's the goalkeeper who takes all the kickouts and should know better than the half forward that I can't catch this back.
Yeah, and it's the things we don't know as well. Was he calling for it? You know, is that way to give it? You know, so there, that's an element to bring into it too. So like the half forward, it was number 12. I didn't catch his name, but he gets the kick out and he turns straight into trouble. Like it was a short kick out, and the Glen players, you know, they, you know, their tails are up. They've just equalised and they're really looking to get this win. They don't want it to go to the replay or extra time. He turns his back. He gives it straight to the goalkeeper, and he sort of catches it, waits kind of late to let it drop. See, it was on one of them streaming service websites, so the camera quality was not brilliant and it wasn't very good at keeping up with the ball by any means. But he definitely did seem to catch it. And then the referee blew up something straight away. But I actually thought, because then the Glen forwards had rushed the goalkeeper. You know, they had no sooner left the half forward to try and swarm the goalkeeper to put him under pressure. But they were calling for it straight away as soon as they knew that he had handled it. And a dire mistake in the end, really. Like, and it's definitely, I mean, just such an annoying one from their point of view, I'm sure, because it's like, it's easier not to do nearly than to do.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. Blessington had a huge win over Bulnacta, who obviously won the Leinster title in 2018. Blessington hadn't won a Wicklow title in 38 years. They went away to Bulnacta. They were 1-5 to no score down. Right? Let's get this away. To Mullinocta, 1-5 to no score down after winning their first county title in 38 years. You imagine, right, these lads now have been on the beer and they're happy enough with their Wicklow title and that's it. Mullinocta didn't score again and they won 1-7 to 5 points. Like, I mean, what is going on here? Their manager, Jonathan Daniels, explained it. He says, we decided to push straight up. Push up on the kickouts and go for broke. We said not to worry about what happened at the other end and just go after their kickouts. We went for broke. Again, every time I read quotes like that, I say, Jonathan Daniels, why didn't you go for broke from the bloody first minute? Why can't every manager say, let's go for broke? Let's go for it. I understand there would have been underdogs in that and maybe they were looking to go defensively. But can this not be a message to every manager that might be listening or in the country anyways? They were 1-5 to no score down. They went for broke. They scored 1-7 to no score. You know, if they had been defensive and opened up and were hammered, you know, there'd be a lot more kind of criticism of, geez, you should have kept more bodies back behind the ball. Like, I mean, go for the bloody game. Like, a lot of these, in this weather, a lot of these games are 50-50. You're champions, every club is champions of their county. You're coming into the game with loads of confidence. Go and try and win the bloody game. But huge credit to Blessington. There was loads of good games in the provincial championships. Again, going to criticise the fact they overlapped the county and we're only giving them a little bit of a mention. Ballinamore deserve a lot of credit. Niall, they almost beat Mountain Bellew, my luck. Not almost beat them, but they had them in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, I think there were two. When I checked the game, I'm not sure how long it was gone, but it was 2-4 to Ballinamore to 5 points to Mountain Bellew, my luck. And in fairness, when Mountain Bellew had only won last weekend, similar enough to Tullamore, I suppose it's probably tough enough to sort of get going into it straight away, you know, because you were celebrating for a few days, and then, you know, it can, after reaching sort of the Everest, it can be tough to get going again. But Mount Bellew did get going again, and I'd say it was similar enough to the boys against Mullinocta. That was
Blessington
against Mullinocta, yeah, because I think it was definitely a wind in the Mullin, in the Mount Bellew and Ballinamore game, but there must have been something similar in the Blessington game, because if they just pushed up on the kickouts, I'd say the kickouts, they can't have been going too far, and the boys were just
about kickouts. This is my going for broke theory, right? Don't ruin my going for broke theory. There could have been a wind. I'm not too sure. There's a good chance that there was a wind. If there was a wind over towards the west, let's just say. The last one we want to talk about here, lads, is Naas beat Tullamore, and we have seen the clip of this, and this is just heartbreaking circumstances. So Naas are 2 points down. This is the last attack of the game, pretty much. There's a long ball goes in, it's caught by Naas, it's laid off to Derek Herwin, who shoots at goal, and it's a brilliant save by Corey White in the Tullamore goals, and you imagine that's it, that's the chance over. The ball breaks from the save out to Aaron Levy, who has his back, who's facing his goal, and he gets the ball. So he turns blind on the turn and goes to lash the ball down the field, and the referee's going to blow the full time whistle, and Derek Herwin doesn't feel sorry for himself, runs in, blocks Aaron Levy down, a and the ball trickles into the net. And poor Corey White after like, Corey White probably should have saved it. I say he just wasn't expecting it. He had just made a great save from a shot that he was expecting, and the ball just trickles over the end line now. Like, I mean, I have never ever seen, because we were talking recently about the ball, which was it, a hurling match?
Alan Connolly got one for Blackrock.
Alan
remember?
Connolly, he yeah. Blocked your man and down. We're saying we see that a lot in soccer, but we don't see it in Gaelic games. Now we've just seen it to win a Leinster club championship match in heartbreaking. This was it.
Yeah, in fairness, like, as you said, you would have to give credit to Darragh Kerwin, because, like, he didn't feel sorry for himself and he was straight in on your man, like, and he was just hunting him down straight away. Your man didn't see that, obviously. He just turned around to sort of boot
Aaron
it out.
Aaron Levy. Yeah.
He just turned around to kind of boot it out the field. And in fairness, like, I can kind of see why he did it. Like, it was 4 minutes of added time. The ball is floating around the, like, when any time the ball is in there and you're, it's only a 2 point or a 1 point game, like, it's just pure panic stations and it's real frantic. And he was just mad to get rid of it. Like, Tullamore needed a bit more composure, do you know, because if he ran with it, or if he kind of turned around and he probably had been bottled up, he could have won a free or something like that. But, like, I would have a bit of sympathy for him, because it's like, a situation like that, you kind of just want to get it out of there, don't you? Like, and it was heartbreaking. Like, what a way to lose a game. Like, because we're 2 points up as well. And, oh, man.
Oh, it definitely is. Like, I mean, but the way I would look at it with Aaron Levy as well is that, I suppose, if he was throwing goals, Lee, and he went to balloon it and it went way wide or got blocked down, you'd say, geez, he had no composure there. You know, that was a very poor effort. It was the last kick of the game. I would equally analyse what he did on the edge of his own 6-yard box, because he blindly tried to drive it down the field. He didn't know who was behind him. And just, you know, a serious lack of composure, even though you would give Darragh Kerwin an awful lot. There's no way Darragh Kerwin thought that this block was going to go into the net, but he went to block it down probably to win the ball back.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. But I think, like, I mean, you're always taught the most important thing, especially late in the game, is the breaking ball, the loose ball. So as soon as the rebound happened, you know, Aaron did so well to actually get it. And I'm sure, like, that's nearly the hard part done. He probably thinks, and his back's the goal, he's not too sure who's behind him or what's behind him.
Yeah.
So it's just a matter of putting his boots through it. You know, he's done the messy part. He was the first man to react, the quickest. And I'm not saying he's resting on his laurels, because, I mean, this is all within a split second, this whole, you know, between him picking the ball, kicking it, and it ended up somehow in the back of the net. And then even if he was blocked down, which I'm sure that was Darragh Kerwin's initial just plan, it's going to be a loose ball again, you know. So I think it's just frantic situation, isn't it? You know, but, like, yeah, so many emotions in that last minute, you know, relief the keeper saved it, and then, oh, panic, it's a loose ball, and then I react the quickest I've got it, and then suddenly, no, I need to get rid of it. And what's the quickest way to get rid of it? By putting your boot through it. But he definitely would have been a lot... it would have took a very cool head, a very experienced man, you know, to try and keep the head up, maybe even draw the foul or get a handy hand pass off. Or if you, like, I don't know how exactly late in the game it was, but, yeah, forcing the referee just to blow the whistle because the ball's as high in the air as it can be.
Would you see, I wouldn't be recommending he hand passes there. And look, this is just terrible, terrible bad luck. The bloody ball was blocked back into his own goal. Terrible luck. I'm not blaming him as such. But in those situations, you know, when a team's pushing for it, pushing for an equaliser, the game's just up, and, you know, the ball's kicked in, great save by the goalkeeper, now he has it. If he ran at a player and fell on the ground, the referee's blown that up, and it's all, you know what I mean, I would say just run out with the ball, and what's the worst can happen, you know, rather than just drive it down. But again, this is hindsight stuff, and if you were to freeze that live and say, what should he do now, I'd say an awful lot of people would say just drive it down the field.
Yeah, 100%, like, because when it's that late in the game, and you don't think, like, when is it ever going to happen that someone will block you down and it'll go into the goals, like.
Oh, desperate.
I don't know, like, I've never seen it happen before in football, like, and it's just desperate bad luck, and you'd feel for Tullamore, in fairness, like, because, like, at least they have the county championship to fall back on last week, but you want to make a run in those provincial competitions, and to be up by 2 points, 4 minutes of added time gone, it's just heartbreaking.
Yeah, no, they're definitely ones to look out for Tullamore, because they obviously didn't have the same lead in time as Naas did, and they went away and they almost beat a decent, Kildare champions are always pretty decent. So Tullamore definitely are on the up. Right, that's always time for, I hope we didn't leave too many out. There's not enough time to get everybody in. We'll be back on Thursday, and we'll preview all the provincial club championship matches, and of course the Kerry County final, which is a Tralee derby. It's Cairns O'Ratleys, who we didn't get a mention. They obviously had a brilliant comeback against Dr. Crokes, and they played their Tralee rivals, Austin Stacks. So we'll look forward to that one on Thursday as well. Talk to you then. Good luck.
But this little dink ball, the only one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken over, hits the ground, and it bounces into a fella's chest.
Why do you not do many interviews?
Oh, really? Yeah, I might have been asked to do a whole pile.
Really?
Yeah. Have you ever rang me?
And they're roaring at me, "Hey, Coffrey, you free state bastard." And next thing I hear, "You have no fucking jurisdiction up here."
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Your personal info, like addresses, phone numbers, and more, are collected and sold by data brokers. But Aura steps in, scanning the web, sending you alerts, and requesting your info be removed. Get Aura's full toolkit, including credit and transaction monitoring, a password manager, VPN, and more. Get a 14-day free trial at Aura.com/safety. That's AURA.com/safety.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas.
I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.